History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And the beauty of it is they don't have to go untold if we'll just take a little time, ask a few questions. More importantly, be patient enough to listen to what comes back our way. We're going to learn a lot, and we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. Along the way, not only do we learn a lot, not only are we educated, we're entertained, but so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And today, I am in Rio Linda, California, with 96-year-old Arthur Renetti, Navy veteran of World War II. Rio Linda, a lot of radio listeners hear that, and they think of a particular late talk show host.
Rush Limbaugh.
You heard a few of those Rio Linda jokes?
Oh, yeah, sure. We've been out here about, 30 years? We used to live in Carmichael. We had a bunch of stuff and said, we ought to get some property. Anyway, we've been here about 30 years now.
And you've been in the Sacramento area your whole life.
My whole life, other than being a guest of Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Well, yeah, on the USS West Virginia, and we're going to hear about that. You've got a picture of the West Virginia on your wall. I also noticed something else on your wall that I don't know if I've seen before. Your father's and your grandfather's medals from the Italian Army in World War I and even prior.
Yeah.
So there's a long legacy of military in your family.
Yep.
Did your dad ever tell you about anything he did in World War One?
Yeah, he was an alpino of ski troops in the Alps.
Uh-huh.
I think he got hit. He said he got hit in the chest with a piece of shrapnel. He got hit there. That's about it. And my grandfather, I never did meet him. He passed away in Italy, but my father told me about stuff. He was I can't remember which war it was. It was some war in Libya or someplace.
And in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But your father, as you said, an alpino, a mountain trooper in World War One.
Yep.
And he and your mother came here.
My father came here prior. He was 18, I think, and he was not eating too well. So then the war broke out, World War One broke out, so the consul said if he goes back and gets in the Italian army, that they would, after the war, if he got married, they would bring he and my mother back here. So that's what happened.
Hmm.
He went back there, and then they got in. My mother said she cried for a year when she got in, and they hosed them down, you know, for bugs and stuff, and they didn't have anything when they got here. Nothing.
Hmm. Wow.
In fact, my mom told me that next door to where they lived, the guy had he was a garbage man. His name was Paletta. And that's where she got her silverware. They'd pick up the food from restaurants and for the hogs and stuff, and waiters sometimes would throw the forks and knives away. That's where she got her silverware.
Wow.
I know that.
So if you tried to complain about something when you were a kid, it didn't go very far,
It didn't
huh?
go too far, no. No. In fact, I remember when I got discharged, I got home. I think it was February 5th. I can't remember the right date. That night I went out, met guys, you know, I went to school with and everything. Everybody getting discharged, having some beers and stuff. And the next night, same thing, you know, drinking beers at home. And the second night, the next morning, I don't know, 7 o'clock, hand grabbed me by the T-shirt. I slept in my T-shirt. Sat me right up in bed. Arturo, you going to go to work? I've been home 2 days. The old man jerked me right out of bed. Mm-hmm. Go to work. This way it was.
That's the way it goes.
That's the way it goes. No free lunch.
Do you remember having an idea in your mind of, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do with my life?
No, I had no idea. When I was in high school, I wanted to be a court reporter.
Hmm.
So I took shorthand, great shorthand and transcription, and I got my certificate for 120 words a minute, and the war broke out the year before I graduated. And when I was graduated, I was working the gas station too. Everybody, all the guys that wanted to go down and join the service, of course, you know. So you went down the post office to get in, and they were at so many people. They said, we'll call you when we get an opening. You know, they had so many guys going down there. We got an opening in the Army. You're going to go in the Army, or you're in the Navy, or that's it, you know. That's how we got in.
Do you remember where you were when you heard that news that Pearl Harbor had been bombed?
Yeah, I was working for Gordon Wilson at a Tidewater Associated Station on 2nd and Capitol Avenue in Sacramento. A guy drove in. I go out to, that's when you had to fill them with gas, wash the windshield, wash the headlights, sweep out the floorboards.
Mm-hmm.
He says, they just bombed Pearl Harbor. I'm thinking, oh, yeah? What the hell's Pearl Harbor? I'm serious.
Sure.
I had no idea where Pearl Harbor was. So I said, oh, okay. So then I found out, you know,
mm-hmm.
the day of infamy. But I had no idea. I was 17 years old.
And did you go to school the next day?
Yeah.
Were a lot of people talking about it?
Yeah, but most of them didn't know where the hell Pearl Harbor was. I'm serious.
Sure, believe you. And did you have any Japanese-American classmates?
Yep. Yes, I sure did. Tell you a little story. Jimmy Kashiwata, great guy. Anyway, he ended up in they took him to an internment camp, of course. He ended up in the 442nd.
Uh-huh. And the reason I ask is, you know, most of us listening to this right now weren't alive during World War II, and we didn't live through these circumstances. But
yeah.
I'm just imagining if I'm a senior in high school and I've got a buddy over there who was born in this country, but his last name is Japanese, just like you were born in this country, but your last name's Italian. And all of a sudden, they're hauling him off somewhere.
Oh, that was terrible. Sacramento had Japanese town, you know, down around 4th Street and stuff. And the Filipinos, when all of a sudden when this happened, the Filipinos are going to attack all the Japanese. And Japanese are great, hardworking people, man. They were, all the ones that I knew were all great people. I felt bad about that. You know, they took everything from them. They had to leave their homes with what they could carry. That's it.
Including your friend.
That's right.
Who then, and at that time, they would have told him, hey, you're not even allowed to be in the armed forces because you're an enemy alien.
That's right.
But he ends up in the 442.
Yeah, 442nd.
And did he make it back?
Yep.
Well, and so for you, so Pearl Harbor happens. You don't know where Pearl Harbor is, but all of a sudden everybody's signing up to go somewhere.
Without a doubt.
And you didn't wait that long yourself?
No.
When did you enlist in the Navy?
Well, I went down to the post office. I was 17. I didn't, you know, it was right after I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I turned 18 in September, and I had to wait. In fact, I wanted to go into the Naval Air Force, and I ended up in gunnery. So they called me when I said, we've got an opening here, and they said, oh, if you join now, you'll get a head start to the boot camp. Then you can go to the Naval Air Force and learn how to fly. Okay, so I joined now, and I ended up in gunnery as a fire controlman.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it.
Yeah, so the promise of someday.
Someday
never came.
It was a good experience, and I loved it. I'm not a bit sorry. I mean, I'm sorry about, you know, the bad part of it, but
sure. As
far as I think every youngster should have about a 2-year experience like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Well, I want to hear some of why you feel that way, but I'm also curious, since your father had, you know, experienced war, survived war, been wounded in war, did he have any advice for you before you shipped out?
Nope. They didn't want me to, you know, to volunteer. They wanted to wait till you get drafted.
Your parents wanted you to wait to get drafted?
Yeah, because I was, there's no way. Finally, they said, well, go. You want to go, go. And it's a good deal.
Well, what'd you think of boot camp? Where was it and what was it like?
Farragut, Idaho. It was cold, son of a gun up there, you know. The food was different and... But it was okay. I ended up with the measles and the mumps up there and survived that. And then I went to fire control school in Seattle, Washington for 8 weeks. And then I got assigned to, we were supposed to go to a 90-millimeter battery up in Alaska. And I was supposed to run the directors there, and they changed that because the 90-millimeters were handled by the Army. Then I got on this 30-day, I went to this Ballard. I was there on that 30, and I got transferred over to the West Virginia.
And how did you feel about that? What did you think of that battleship?
Oh, the battleship was great compared to that other thing.
The destroyer you're on?
Terrible.
You didn't want to spend the whole war on a tin can, huh?
No. The battleship was great. I thought it was great. It was in Sky 2.
And explain to everybody what that means. So you said fire controlman, and some people hear that, they think, oh, he was fighting fires. No, we're talking about a different
kind of fire here. Yeah, the gunnery. We were in gunnery. We took care of the directors, the computers. They had a computer. Stable verticals, which the stable vertical is what controls the firing of the gun. The officer's pulling the trigger, but it won't go off until it's in the right spot because of the gyro compass. If it wasn't like that, you'd be shooting in the water, when you're under moving. Directors, you find the target, you get on it, you rate control, it sends the information down to the computer, the plotting room. They crank it in there, and you watch, and does the crosshair stay on the target? You take your hands off. If it doesn't, you rate control back on, put it back on, boom.
Mm-hmm.
The secondary battery was the aircraft and did light bombarding. Then the main battery fired for big, you know, bombardment. Or the sea engagement was the last battleship to battleship war, Surigao Straits. And we were in that one. I was in turret 2, right on the coincidence rangefinder in there. And that's where we had credit for sinking a battleship there. And that was the end of surface engagements to the ships.
Haven't had one since. And when you say Sky 2, for people who aren't familiar with your ship.
That's a director. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sky 1, Sky 2, Sky 3, Sky 4. Port side, starboard side, on the bow and on the stern. You had four 5-inch 38 turrets on each side. So each director had two turrets.
Mm-hmm.
So if the action was up forward, the Sky 1 would have them two turrets. Sky 2, anything on the side here.
Uh-huh.
And Sky 4 in the back, those two turrets on the other side. And Sky 2, same thing. So two turrets, it's four guns, there's two barrels in the 538s. That was on those ships. And the main battery was 16-inch.
Mm-hmm.
Big.
That's a big gun.
Big gun.
Loud gun.
Yeah, they shot at Iwo Jima. We must have shot, I don't know how many rounds. You still couldn't get those guys.
They were so dug in.
I mean, you're talking about a ton. A projectile weighs a ton. And it set the fuse on them. They were even shooting armor-piercing into the ground. And couldn't. The guys are tough.
Well, and Iwo Jima, I mean, that's not till February of 1945.
Yeah.
But there are lots of things you experienced before that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, for you coming on the West Virginia itself, were you aware of what that ship had already been through at Pearl Harbor?
Yeah, I was aware of that. And it was, they raised it and brought it back to Bremerton. And when I went aboard, it was ship's company. And we just put it all together. Got on and we took off on it in 44. Got out in the start of the Philippine invasion.
Was there anybody still aboard that ship who had survived Pearl Harbor?
Yep.
Did they tell you some of those stories?
Yeah. Yeah, there was what they call them plank owners.
Yeah.
You know, the storekeeper was aboard, is a chief. A turret 2 gun captain, Spud Crawford, he was a boarder. That's the two I know. I don't know if any officers were aboard it or not.
Did that mean anything to you? Did that maybe add some weight to what you were doing?
Oh, yeah. Those guys were on there, you know, got sunk in right back. And that Spud Crawford was in the turret 2 since he was a seaman. And he came up to be turret, a little short guy. He was a head honcho of that turret, that's all.
I guess so. Yeah. Might as well have had his name on it. Well, and had you ever been at sea before you joined the Navy?
No.
Did you get your sea legs right away? Did that take you a while?
It took me a while. I was sicker than a dog on that destroyer.
Like sick. A cork, huh?
Yeah, Jesus, I was sick.
So that's why you like the battleship better.
Yeah, well, yes.
Okay.
Much better.
And we'll hear some of those battleship memories when we come back, from the Battle of Leyte Gulf to Iwo Jima to that kamikaze attack at Okinawa. Find photos and a short video with today's guest, Arthur Renetti of Rio Linda, California, by pulling up the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, or you can go to hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this.